All right, it's me, and I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. I hope you guys are all right. We've got a really cool episode for you today. I think you guys are going to really, really like this one. The interview is with Cam and Chris from Jet. Jet, the Australian band that supported Oasis and had massive hits with the likes of Are You Gonna Be My Girl? Great band. And this was brilliant. It was a Zoom call we had. Chris was in LA and Cam was in Australia and I was in the UK, and we're sort of, it was cool. It was just like a little kind of mini sort of revival of the two guys from Jet that hadn't seen each other for ages, and I was sort of just sat there in the background really just enjoying having them chat onto each other. So it was really, really good fun. They're such cool guys, and and also very exciting. Cam sent me over a track that's never been heard before, which is, this is like a unmixed version of it, but you hear it later from his band Already Gone. So I play quite a chunky clip of it in the episode, but it's really, really good, and this is the only place you can hear it right now. Make sure you're following the guys on Instagram. That's the place to be for all their sort of new music, whether it be their own stuff or then when Jet come back. The links are in the description of the episode. Nothing huge going on in the world of Oasis. We're still waiting to hear sort of what's happening with this Record Store Day release. Is it a best of? It looks like it probably is a best of. That kind of leaked a few days ago that it looks like a best of, but it's still not been announced as of the evening of the 22nd of April when I'm recording this. We still don't know what's going to happen with the Nebworth anniversary, if there is going to be a film or something coming out. We don't know what's happening with Noel's video, whatever happened with that. We don't know what's happening with the Mind Games cover that Noel posted a little clip of. Come on, guys, give us a bit more. We have had it confirmed that Liam's playing Transmit. We've had it confirmed that there's a documentary that Noel's doing for Sky Arts coming out, which is like a performance that he's doing at the London Duke of York Theatre. Which is going to apparently be 10 tracks spanning his career in Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds and Oasis, and he talks about significant moments in his own life and career, so it should be really good. But yeah, we are just waiting for confirmation of a lot of this stuff as the world gets back to normal in some way. I had a very cool thing happen to me this week, which is that the brilliant Ryan Harvey paid for a cameo from Matt Morgan of the Matt Morgan podcast fame. But we're not going to talk about that today because I still want to see if something happens from it. Only a couple of days ago, nothing's happened yet, and I want to get the whole story from Ryan. So we'll probably talk about that next time. But for now, without any further ado, let's cross over to my interview now with Cam and Chris from Jet.
I said, are you gonna be my girl?
It was because of Dave Sardi, really, I think. Well, what we had Get Born, the producer on Get Born was Dave Sardi. And what I heard, allegedly, is that Noel heard the record and loved, like, particularly the way it sounded, you know, the production. And so they made their Don't Believe the Truth record with Dave Sardi. And Noel actually told me... one night, was it me and you, Cam, that snuck into that show? No, it wasn't. It was like some show they were doing. Anyway, we snuck in, me and maybe it was Mark or Louis. I can't remember now. God, it was a pretty messy tour for me. Cam wasn't drinking as much or at all, right? I don't think. So you were like, you probably should ask him all the questions. Probably remembers everything. But anyway, I was going to say, so when I met Noel, you know, he was super, I was really impressed with how sort of chill he was. And like, you know, conversational, and he told me that like he loved the sound of Get Born, and you know, he's like, that's one of the reasons why, you know, we wanted to work with Dave. And then, you know, one thing led to another, and I guess, yeah, we ended up on tour with each other. I don't know who took the call or whatever. I suppose Marcus got in touch with our manager and we were asked, and I guess we thought it was a good idea. So we off we went. There were two tours. There was one on the East Coast, and then there was a small break, and there was one on the West Coast. And it was also that same year where all the hurricanes were going nuts. After Katrina, there was a series of hurricanes, which is part of like probably the best story that I know of that too, actually. But there you go. So I think that's sort of how, I mean, me personally, I've been an Oasis fan my entire life. So when I got that phone call from one of our managers, I was super excited. I don't know how the other guys felt about it, but I was super pumped. And just getting to watch them play every night for, shit, I don't know, the whole total was probably about 7 weeks when you put them both together. Yeah. It was great. It was a real fun time.
Thing about for you guys, for me growing up in the UK, I'm born 1980, so I'm right in like the you know, your generation, and so you were one of the first wave of bands that was my age, right? And so it was really exciting that, you know, oh, these guys are coming through, but they're my age. And so you've also got then the first wave of bands that grew up as Oasis fans, you know, and I think that was really cool to hear, that first set of bands that you think, you know what, I think these guys, you know, were influenced by Oasis actually. And I don't think it's like really, really obvious. Like some of the UK bands, it is obvious. I mean, obviously your sound, especially Get Born, had a lot more kind of, you know, American influences and sort of that more like rock and roll sort of sound. But yeah, I mean, from what I've read, it was a lot of 60s and 70s bands, but then also like You Am I were a big, big influence. But were you also kind of, I know you guys know Davey Lane, who I've interviewed before, who I'm sort of quite in touch with, who was in UMI and sort of similar.
He's a huge Oasis fan. He's a massive Oasis fan. Yeah. I know Davey. Davey and I share that in common. Like, we both love Oasis. But Cam, you should probably jump in, man, because I feel like your memory of it's probably better than mine. But like, I was personally really excited. I'll leave it there. I was like,
if I talk about, I mean, my first knowledge of like Oasis when in, you know, I guess what are we talking, the mid 90s or, you know, and Chris was super excited. You remember him showing me the sort of Nebworth sort of concert and just like the sea of people, you know, and going, this is massive, you know, this is rock and roll, you know, and it was exciting. And I guess as well, like before that, it was like the Verve, and you sort of got this sense of like this northern thing happening. And obviously not growing up in the UK, we weren't exactly sure, but we could see it was a different flavor, you know what I mean, that the sort of, you know, I guess Richard Ashcroft walking down the street and bumping into people, there's a sort of like, you know, I don't know if it's macho or it's sort of like
an attitude, the rock and roll attitude came back.
It's an attitude thing.
Yeah
And no nonsense, you know what I mean. And then Oasis comes and they bring sort of this acerbic wit as well, and sort of the sort of, you know, so this attitude of, you know, taking the mick out of people and being, you know, irreverent and funny, and then also being this massive band. They came to Australia and they were sort of, I think afterwards they even said to us, like, we were terrible tour, we were off our heads, and, you know, they came back to do Big Day
they
Out.
They actually got arrested when they landed in Melbourne. Yeah, they got into some argument in the first class lounge, and like, we're, you know, I don't know, I can't allege what happened, but I know that the police were there when they landed, and they walked off the plane lit up with all the paparazzi and shit going like this. And I was just looking at the TV, eating my cornflakes, going, who the fuck is this? Like, that was the first time I ever saw them. I don't think I'd even heard their music. I saw that first, and I was just like, oh, shit.
The bad boys of rock continue to live up to their name. Oasis has flown into Australia straight into controversy. Brothers Liam and Noel Gallagher accused of harassing staff and passengers on their flight into Perth. The airline is threatening to ban the group. Federal police have been asked to investigate.
300 screaming fans waiting for one British rock group with a growing reputation as rat bangs.
I meet that f***ing captain again with his chop-off on the plane. See that? I've got sight in me.
Oasis arrived in Perth last night but started their Australian tour, ignoring adoring fans with a trademark contempt. While their egos would fit into a truck, Turagos took them away. But today they couldn't escape claims of shocking behaviour on the flight from Hong Kong to Perth.
It was like a flight from hell.
Passengers from the Cathay Pacific flight say the band's behaviour was dangerous, forcing the captain to intervene.
They were throwing things at passengers, they were abusive, they were disgusting towards the air crew.
As the band members played tourists at Rottnest, lead singer Liam Gallagher couldn't resist having his say about the flight.
I don't give a flying what comes in it, because I'll tell you kids, I'd rather walk.
Which is just what the band might be doing, because Cathay Pacific is demanding a good behaviour guarantee before allowing the band back on board. That prompted this threat to the Cathay Pacific captain.
They only told me to shut my mouth and like carry on. I'm like, this is fine, because I like that.
Who told you to shut your mouth?
Some panhead who wants to stab him with a pickaxe.
That's enough. That's enough, lads. Really.
The Dawkins are taking their complaints to the federal police.
I'm surprised that, one, that they weren't taken away by the federal police when they arrived at the airport, because if it had been you or I carrying on like that, I'm damn sure that that's exactly where we would have ended up with, in jail.
Deborah Bishop, 7 hour news.
Like, when first meeting them in the flesh and, you know, like going on tour with them, you've got all this sort of built up stuff about, you know what I mean? The sort of, you know, the splashy headlines in tabloids and all the stuff. And then you're going to meet him and Noel's like very conversational, as you say, and just really polite. And and like he's got his wit there, man. Don't get me wrong. He's no puppy dog, but I mean, he was very welcoming, you know, and cool.
Yeah,
and
super not like easy to talk to, like I was saying before. But you know, I mean, you couldn't get more opposite than Noel and Liam. I thought it was really interesting I don't know if you noticed this, Cam, but I sort of noticed that they were never really in the same room at the same time. It was almost like a Scooby-Doo act. It was kind of like, yeah, backstage, right? Like, yeah, you know, Jet had this huge two turntable, like flight case packed full of vinyl records and these massive speakers, and we used to wheel it backstage. And that would be kind of like our warm up. We would warm up. And so often the party ended up back in our dressing room, which was kind of funny. But it's funny when I think back, I'm like, I remember talking to Noel like often, and I remember talking to Liam often, but like, I feel like they were never in the same room at the same time.
I've heard that.
I don't know
I've
if that was that. Deliberate or if that's,
you know. Yeah, I've heard that from a lot of other bands that played with them, that it wasn't like a, you know, like a sort of specific thing. Liam will eat from 7:12 to 7:26. You know, it wasn't like that.
I think it's just you, if you're in a band with the same people for, geez, I don't know at that point how long they'd been together, but you know what I mean? You got to have breaks from it. You got to, you know, you got to have your own time to, like, you know. So I think he probably just had enough, you know. It was they were together for a long time. He'd probably just sort of had enough of that whole touring life, make a record, go on tour, go all around the world, et cetera. And you need your space sometimes, you know. So anyway,
yeah.
Who knows what goes on. I'll tell you one funny thing. I texted him last night. And I sent him like some artwork. I sent him actually a picture of a brutalist structure from Eastern Europe that it's just really like sort of eye-popping. And I sent it to him and he wrote back, is that your new studio? it's like 50 stories high. Like, you know, the cars are tiny down the bottom. I'm like, of course not. But like, you know, he just pulls stuff out like on the regular, just straight off like that, you know, pretty quick-witted.
That's cool. So you've got quite a nice little relationship then, that you'll just sort of ping text occasionally.
I don't bug him, but like, you know, I'll send him like stuff that I really like or something that I think is cool. And, you know, he always has something funny to say about it.
Mm-hmm. And the band name as well, the Mystic Knights of Amnesia.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Which he didn't even remember because, like, he gave it to me a couple of years prior and then we forgot about it. And then we're like, oh, God, remember Mystic Knights of Amnesia? So I texted him. This is 2 years after he had told me. I texted Mystic Knights of Amnesia to him and he wrote back, holy shit, that's amazing. Is that the name of your band? Like, he didn't remember that he had already sent it to me. Yeah, so it's funny because we were actually talking about that last night because I tried to send a vinyl to him and I was like, I said, I cannot believe you don't own a vinyl player. And he goes, don't need one.
Unsentimental.
Yeah, that's a good characterization. He is unsentimental, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think he's ever been too bothered about, you know, all the different versions and remixes and remasters. I think he's always just thought, well, it's a song. A song is a song, you know, and it wouldn't really matter
like
to
the
him.
Red album and the Blue album are the only two Beatles albums you need, you know? Like,
yeah.
You know, he used to say that, like, just the hits. Why would you bother with all that stuff?
And that's actually a good thread to pick up on. Like you said, that maybe our first record definitely, it didn't sound like Oasis. We're probably drawing from some of the same influences in that we're Beatles fans, and I don't know how much they were Stones fans, probably much more Beatles, obviously, but the songwriting thing, you know, the melody thing, the sort of that being the sort of, yeah, being able to like bang it out on an acoustic guitar and it works. Like, you know, we're not talking textures, we're not talking synths, we're not talking, you know, we're like much more just, you know, you could sit around with an acoustic guitar and play it to someone and there's a song. So that we probably at that time, definitely that was our ethos. That was, you know, where we were coming from.
Oh, look what you've done. You made a fool of everyone. Oh, well, it seemed like such fun until you had one. Give me back my point of view, 'cause I just can't think for you.
I think the second album has got a bit more of an Oasis-y feel to it, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think, you know, Bring It On Back has a little bit of a kind of a similar feel or a tempo, you know. Oasis do this really good rolling tempo. It's kind of
I was gonna say dirgy, but it's not that low. It's kind of a little bit, it's split the difference, you know, like,
yeah, right,
yeah,
right.
Rolling and you know, sort of bigger,
you
sort of,
you gotta roll with it, you gotta take your time.
The other day, it's really like, I was listening to it. This guy was walking out. I was at this boxing fight. I was at this fight, and this guy used it as his walkout song. This Irish fight,
really?
It was supersonic. And I was just like, man, this is so back. You know what I mean? It's really like slow, and he sort of, you know, came out. Everyone's heads were bobbing. Right.
Maybe getting together. Don't really wanna know. Getting together, God and girls. Getting together. I just wanna fly. It's all, they're all in that kind of thing. So I think a couple of the tracks on Shine On had that kind of thing. Like there was another one called Come On, Come On that was like kind of a little in that zone. But to be honest with you, you know, we sort of were fighting against that a lot of the time. I feel like, you know, I would have done things differently, but, you know, I don't want to get into that, but like it's what's done is done. The record is the record and whatever. But yeah, you know, I guess you could sort of draw parallels, but I agree with what Cam said. I think it's more that we share influences in common than it is like sitting there, because I can't honestly, and Cam, you could like say, you could, what do you reckon? But, you know, I feel like Nick, Mark, you guys didn't really like grow up as massive Oasis fans, really. So as far as songwriting goes, you know, that was probably not a thing for you. You know, you were listening to other stuff.
Come on, come on, shout it out, everyone. You can tell me what to believe.
yeah, to be fair, probably true. I was sort of like, by the time, you know, like you were getting into them, it was my main sort of avenue into seeing them, and I was probably more towards the end of my teens, you know what I mean? So I was like on a different trip, and like you said, James, kind of listening to local groups and more, you know, the Australian sort of what was happening there. And, you know, so there's a bit of like sort of Australian rock and roll sort of stuff in our DNA, like Easy Beats and, you know, Loved Ones?
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
The Loved Ones. Easy Beats, The Loved Ones. Yeah, that's a good shout. The Loved Ones are a really cool band that sort of went largely under the radar, but really cool. If you're the kind of person that likes like really cool sort of 60s garage rock, there's that band's...
Like if you hear the Nuggets stuff, you know, the old Aussie Nuggets stuff, you know, we were trying for that often because it's just like a really authentic Australian rock and roll sound that came out of us. And, you know, sometimes Australians were playing catch up a lot, you know, even like the old vinyls used to take 2 months to land in Australia, even up until the 80s. Like, so sometimes Australians are in that sense of just not being...
In the moment of the big moment where it all broke or whatever.
Yeah. They could look at pictures in the magazines of the Ramones but didn't know what they sounded like. Or maybe they guessed, but... I think that a lot of that Australian rock, it is sometimes it's weird and it can be, you know, different because it's sort of being, it's like the wombat or something, you know, it's cut off from the rest of the world, so it turns out super fucking weird, you know, or the platypus probably, you know, more.
Like that, like Clash record Sandinista, which apparently didn't really go nuts everywhere else, but in Western Australia it was like a huge record.
Really,
you know, like I think, you know, well, Perth's one of the most isolated major cities in the world. It's like the nearest city is what, probably Adelaide or Melbourne, and then going the other way, it's Johannesburg, I think, in South Africa. So like it's super remote out there. So things take hold. Anyway, getting sidetracked. I'm just getting a glass of water. I can hear you guys though.
Don't worry, go for it. Well, Cam, while we've got you, I was going to say, what about as a guitar player as well, like with your, you know, Noel Gallagher as a guitar player and that general guitar sound with Bonehead, and then when Gem became part of the band, obviously when you were touring, it was like the Noel and Gem dual guitar thing. I mean, what was your thoughts about that?
I I've never been much of a solo player until recently, actually. Well, not that I play solos, but I feel like it should always... I think Oasis would be on board with this. I'm not into like solos for solo's sake, the sort of masturbatory blues inspired, you know.
That's an American thing, you know.
Plenty of British, you know, blues, you know. But here's the thing, like Eric Clapton and stuff, you know, early days, that was searing stuff, you know, like stuff from like John Mayall and the Blues Breakers and stuff, like that was fantastic because they were sort of integral to the music. But I think it obviously became a thing where everyone, every guitarist felt like, oh, now I need to solo for 5 minutes. And it would be like just like masturbatory, as I said. But, so I feel like I approach it in a sort of, it has to be a slave to the song. It has to mean something. It has to be there. And I think that, you know, generally Noel solos tend to be towards this, the like much more melodic and more repeating a theme. You know, it's a melody, it's something that is in there to be another hook for the ear, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so I that's the sort of soloing I tend to, you know, I enjoy because it sort of comes in and it, you know, provides another layer of melody or something. So yeah, you know, that would be my thoughts on the guitar, you know, other than just sort of the broad sweeping sort of the way they play chords and the way that it's sort of like a background wallpaper often to, you know, the sound of the music. It is like a texture really because it's sort of layered rock guitars, which is definitely like it provides, you know, that's underneath and then like Liam's voice cuts over the top, you know what I mean? You know, the record Don't Believe the Truth sounded amazing, like Noel talked about, you know, and Dave Sardi, he's getting plugs on this one. He gets amazing guitar sounds.
I know, but so many plugs.
Part of that is like he lines up were with us. He lined up like five cabs in the room, and they're all mic'd, and there were room mics, and then there were like three or five like heads. I don't know if you know the amplification. So you got the cabinet, which is the speaker, and then you got the amplifier, the head on top, and then about five of that, and then they're all, he can plug them and basically turn them all up as well and just play them all or two or three together, and you get these sort of harmonics buzzing off each other, creating new swirling sort of, you know, things happening in the room, and they sound fucking great. And you can also turn them up super loud. So the guitars in Don't Believe the Truth sound great. If I go back to Get Born as well, the guitars, yeah, you know, Don knows how to get a guitar sound.
Yeah,
so
I couldn't agree more. I think, like, I mean, personally, I feel like guitar wise, that is their best sounding record. Mm-hmm. You're totally right. It really kind of gave, I think, Noel a better platform even than what he had before. You know, some really cool stuff. And also the record was just different. There were kind of more riffs on it than just like strummy chords, like, which was more their previous kind of zone. Right? Drum wise, when we did tour with them, Zach Starkey was playing drums, and it was incredible watching him every night. He's an incredible drummer, and he's also a really sweet guy, and we got along really well. I used to watch him every night too. I think for Oasis, for me personally, is more about the songs than the individual sort of efforts of the musicians to outplay each other. Very different to a band like sort of like a Led Zeppelin, where everybody's just like, oh damn, did you hear that bass line? Holy shit, the drummer's on fire. Wow, listen to Jimmy Page solo. Yeah, these guys are virtuosos. It's more like a soul, it's more like a soul thing, you know. Northern soul or something like that, you know. What they do is like, you know, and often when I'm explaining Oasis to my American friends, who, you know, they obviously know them and stuff, but like, I don't think they really understand. I don't think you can really understand Oasis until you stand and watch them play in front of 70,000 people in England, especially in England. I mean, you know, and that's when that was the day I met Noel, actually. I don't know if we can jump around to this now or whatever, but. Yeah, I actually met Noel at, what's the one near London? Reading Festival.
That or Chelmsford, what was it? V Festival was in Chelmsford.
Or maybe it could have been V, you're right. I don't remember. I'm sure it'll be on Google or something. But we were playing, you know, a pretty good slot. I think we were like maybe 5 or 6 p.m. maybe, something like that. And Oasis were headlining. So, you know, they came over and we met each other, and we knew that we were going on tour with them. So they, you know, invited us up on the stage to watch. And, man, it was just like, it was one of the greatest sort of like the most fun nights that I can remember from all the fun nights, and there were many of them in Jet. Like, but yeah, just watching, you know, in England, they all know the words and they're all singing it, every word for every song. It was quite impressive. And then
we went out on tour in America, and it's a different experience. You know, Americans want a different show. They also don't understand like Liam's, you know what I mean? They, you know, they get, all right, what's going on tonight? And like, you know, is everybody feeling all right? Like, you know, kind of, it's more showman and stuff, like, you know, and then Liam's like, it's there with his hands behind his back, kind of, you know, and doing his thing. And he's starting, like, he does it so well. But it was definitely a different experience watching them in America as to seeing them play in front of their own people. Like, yeah, good times.
I was going to say the way that they present themselves, or the way they are, you know, it is pretty much a direct straight line from off stage to on stage. You know, there's no like show persona.
Right.
The persona is constant. It doesn't change from stage to off stage to interview. It's the fucking same thing. Which is cool, which I think just plays in that northern no-nonsense thing, you know. They're not sort of thespians, you know what I mean? They're not, like, putting on, like, a, you know, I love David Bowie and I love, you know, people being creative and all that, but that's not them, you know what I mean? They do something else, so.
They're not pretentious.
No.
They're not pretentious. But, like, you know, at the same time, like you said earlier, you know, it's so, you know, so witty kind of thing. Like, I mean, God, I don't even know where to start. I can say that, like, oh, God, you know, do you remember that one night where the truck went missing, Cam?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was one of those things that was a disaster, but you're enjoying the disaster as it's happening.
It's probably my favorite story, but I don't know how to tell it, because you, like, the punchline at the end, I wasn't there for it. You were there. Remember when you were like, wow, the guitars, remember?
I do. Well, I don't know if I was there, because I'm listening, like, I don't want to blow the whole thing, man. I'm not like.
No. So I'll tell it and then I'll handball it to you at the end.
And I'll fuck it up. Thanks, cool.
No, you won't. You won't. You remember, right? Like, the truck, babe, that was empty.
I remember the truck. So anyway, the it was Katrina, right?
Yeah. Well, no, yeah. Hold on. You got to go further back, because the night before, I fucking went AWOL for some reason and left and went to New York and then made it back in time. I don't even know why. It was a weird night. I got back in time for the show, but I kind of really didn't want to play because I was like, I hadn't slept in 48 hours and I was like, it was a real big one. And but, you know, I got to the thing and then there was all this commotion, and it turns out one of Oasis's what they call backline trucks had gone missing. Now, the backline truck is the truck that has all of the guitars and the microphones, like all the important stuff for the stage, right? All the other stuff is rigging and whatever. So they couldn't even make an announcement to the crowd with a microphone. There's 20,000 of them gathered on the hill. And I was there just like thinking, oh, God, please, it's called off. And the crowd were out there getting mad because they thought, oh, great, Oasis have done it again. They're just not going to turn up. But that wasn't the case. The actual reason that the backline truck had turned around because it was hurricane season and the truck driver was worried that his wife was going to be caught up in it. So he just instinctively just turned the truck around and started heading to New Orleans.
From Baltimore to New Orleans is like fucking thousands of kilometers, right? So
yeah,
I don't know how he thought he was going to get there in time, but he was obviously just lost his mind, you know.
Lost his mind and started headed in the opposite direction. And they had all Noel's guitars on it, like the ones that he wrote all of his big hits on and all that sort of stuff. And so Liam, I've got to say about Oasis, like Liam and well, all the whole band, but you know, for a guy like Liam who's had so much success, you know, to see how eager he is to fucking get on stage every night and play was really like a big deal to me. It was really impressive. So he was waiting down by the truck bays, right? Like there's 10 or so trucks on the tour, and then the last truck was missing. And we're all just sitting there, we're like, what's going on? Blah, blah. Liam was standing by the empty truck bay, just waiting for the truck, waiting there, pacing around with, like, you know, a couple other guys in the band, and Cam was there. So Cam goes up to Liam, right? Maybe you can tell him the rest.
I mean, did I say, oh, fuck, I hear that Noel's like 40, 50,000 pound guitars on the truck. And he goes, oh, fuck that, you know, my tambourine's on there.
Yeah, he's like, fuck that. What about my tambourines?
My tambourine. My $40 tambourine.
The
birthday party was a lot of fun too. The Colorado Red Rocks show where things go a little crazy afterwards. In fact, if you look in the gatefold of one of their documentaries, I think it's called Don't Stop the Clock. So you can see all the culprits in there. And there are some pretty good culprits because we did that to a Kasabian as well. So you can just imagine what was going on.
I was going to ask
a party about on wheels, pretty much. And yeah.
Yeah, because that's Lord Don't Slow Me Down. You're close.
There you go.
Yeah, and it was and there's a documentary as well, and that they made a video of it. And so, yeah, you do have bits of that birthday party on the... It looked like a lot of fun, I'll just say that.
Kasabian were there, and us, and a couple of people who sort of come, like other bands that we toured with, or they had, and they sort of came in from everywhere. And they got a lot of footage of the whole thing, right?
Yeah,
they were there all the time. We actually had this one after our Hollywood Bowl show. Two funny things happened, but I said to Noel at one point, I was like, "Why don't you all come back to my house for a drink after the show?" And he was like, "Oh, fucking great!" And I kind of didn't really expect him to say yes, but he was like, "Yeah, let's do it." So we went all back to my house and had a crazy party. And I don't know if you remember that, Cam, but like the neighbors were flashing lights on the thing and there were just so many people there. Everybody was like...
The cop got super aggressive?
The cop got really aggressive with me, threw me up against a tree. I don't even know why I opened the door. I mean, like, I didn't know the laws. Like, if I just opened it a crack and he just stomped on it with his boot straight into me against the tree. And he held me up and he's like, who said go fuck yourself to the cops like this? Because I had thought that it was my neighbors shining their flashlights inside, but it was actually the cops. And I was like, fuck off, I know where you live. But it turns out they were LAPD. So anyway, everybody scattered. The next day we were in, I think, San Francisco, and Liam came up and was like, to the film crew, was like, because everyone was talking about how much fun they had at the party, and Liam was, he had missed it because he had a cold or something, and he was saying to like the video crew, he's like, you can't just like edit me in, can you can't just like, you know, beam me into the shot, like superimpose me into the party or whatever. Which is pretty funny, but
have been involved.
After He was so bummed that he'd missed a rager that he was trying to get himself superimposed into the party.
Rainbow time, it's birthday time!
Happy birthday to you! Happy birthday to Leo! Happy birthday to you!
With that tour, I mean, like, how that is a pretty great lineup. I mean, I know you said it's like American crowd, so it's not going to be like as nuts, but you know, to just be part of that team. But then I just would say, how did that compare to like the shows you've done with like the Rolling Stones, for instance, who are, you know, who you've done a lot of shows with?
I think that the difference, like, I think Chris touched on it earlier, where it was like, you know, did Liam and Noel, oh, you touched on it, saying, oh, Liam will eat between these hours and then Noel will, and, you know, so super organised. It wasn't, you know what I mean? But the Stones was like that, you know what I mean? So everything in the Stones is very much like to the clock, and they've got these long-standing traditions / rules, you know, but they were friendly enough, but you're definitely locked into a lane, you know what I mean, when you're playing with the Stones. Here you are, this is your spot. You get like, at one point you get like 10 minutes hanging with them and you get a photo at the end or whatever.
Yeah,
you
know? It's like Disneyland. It's like going to Disneyland or something, but Oasis treated us more like peers, really.
Than just like, loose, you know, like not loose with Oasis. It's just like a normal gig. Like, you know, like as in you wander around, you're part of, no one's being too precious, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it's just more normal with Oasis, you know what I mean? It's just how it should be.
Except for that night after the Madison Square Garden show, remember when we went to Lucky Strike and everyone was stage diving off that bar? There was only like maybe 40 people in there, but like
I think
I had a cold. I had a cold, and they superimposed me in after.
No, it was just it was a bit wild. Basically, we just turned up after the show, and Noel went over to the DJ booth and was like, "You mind if I DJ?" And the guy was like, "Be my guest." And so Noel just started playing all his favorite songs, super loud. Everybody, like, it was a huge party. Things got wild. Yeah. But I mean, that was kind of pretty typical for that tour. You know, everybody was having fun, everyone was having a good time. You look so fine that I really wanna make you mine. I say you look so fine that I really wanna make you mine. Four, five, six, come on and get your kids. Now you don't need the money when you look like that, do you, honey? Well, sure, we talked about it a little bit. I'll just say, yeah, Mystic Nights of Amnesia's going to be coming out in the next few months. We're working with the record label out of London, actually, and we sort of, I mean, I don't like, we want to sort of put out our second EP almost immediately after the first one, but we still haven't really sort of talked about, you know, or planned that through, but there's definitely going to be a release in about 3 months. I'm super excited about it. It's like, if you know Jet, then, you know, don't be expecting that, because it's definitely not that. It's quite sort of benign in a fun, like in a good way. Like a lot of 10cc influences and Eagles, and like it's a lot of fun to make it. I probably had a little bit too much fun while I was making it. But it stood up, and like, you know, we did it all analog, and a good friend of mine, Jason Hill, mixed it and produced it. He does a lot of like music for David Fincher now, who's, you know, the director, you know, Mindhunter and Seven and all mm-hmm. that sort of stuff. Anyway, so I'm really happy with it. Super stoked. Really glad it's finally coming out. Yeah, that's what I'm sort of working on right now. I'm actually in the desert. I don't know, look, if you can see out the window, but it's my buddy Aaron's house. He's built a studio here. So we come out here to work on Mystic Night stuff.
Brilliant. Very cool. And you've...
Cam's got something else happening as well.
Yeah, Zoonotics, Cam.
Yeah. Although it's a group I've been putting together since sort of just before lockdown, like when we went through them last year. And I've been writing stuff, and then Jet was taking a break, so I was like, I'll just go towards starting a whole new group, you know, getting people together, doing the whole thing, and yeah, it's been cool. Like, lockdown was strangely, although I was going absolutely insane, I got 3 kids and there was homeschooling going on, I still managed to bang out about, you know, 15 tracks. Just recording by myself. So it was incredible. It always worked for me, this hot house, I don't know what you call it, sort of like sweatshop thing where I had the kids going crazy around me, and I would just sort of be able to like just sort of focus. I was on the kitchen table, and you can hear in all the demos like the kids swirling in the background. I left it in. But now I'm recording them for real up in a studio here near Melbourne, and you know they're sounding fucking great. Like, I'm really happy with the people. It was kind of like going back into the studio again, and you know, sort of nervous because I hadn't worked with the producer and stuff. But he's been in a relationship, just sprung up straight away. You know, I'm super happy. I'm going to see one more of them next week, and then we're going to start up in May again.
There's one of them now.
It's by Drama Pete. He's
so come and say hello. Hello. Lately, I've been getting this feeling, but it's nothing I can put a finger on. Lately, I haven't quite been myself.
I miss like being out playing real shows, you know. It's quite like I love the chaos. Probably not so much. I don't know. I'm not going to speak for Cam, but like I do like it. And there is a certain kind of controlled chaos and about it. And that is that it's quite repetitive. So if you've got the kind of mind that like takes flight a lot, or that just like you forget to do stuff, or, you know, you like, you can't finish a song because you get so excited about the verse that you start writing a new song, which is me. Touring's really good for that, because it's like, although it is chaotic and crazy and fun, it's also quite structured. You know, you get up, your sound check is at 2 o'clock, and then your show is at blah, blah, blah. And then afterwards you have, you know, you can chill, and then you get on the bus, you go to the next town, and then you do it all again. And so there's something like quite, you know, rhythmic that I really miss about it, you know, proper touring. I mean, we've just sort of done a few festivals here and there. We haven't really committed to anything, but yeah.
Any plans? Well, I was going to say, I've got a few questions from listeners. I put it out there that I was talking to you guys. So we've had Victor Poor said, any plans for a new Jet album or tour? And also, what's your relationship with the Vines after touring them with them in 2004? Are you going to do joint shows again, like in 2018?
So the first one.
I was waiting for you to say it.
We can take the first question. No plans at this point. Obviously, the world is being the way it is as well. I mean, you know, why would you try and book a tour? You know, although hats off to people who are, man, I've got that many tickets to shows that they just keep being postponed, you know. So now, like,
you're like so Fletch. You're like Fletch, you know, when you like open your wallet and all the fucking IDs come out, like you've
just
'80s movie reference there. Sorry about that.
Yeah. So no plans at this point for Jet. I think we're kind of like deep in working on our own stuff. Like Nick has his solo record. I'm recording. Chris has got, you know, doing his stuff. So not right now. But with the Vines, we did actually do we did a show with them.
That's why I was laughing, because like, what's your relationship like with the Vines? The last interaction I remember you had with him was really funny.
Yeah, we went out with Craig and sort of were at a pub just in Sydney till about 3 a.m. drinking after a show with him. And then the next day I was carrying like an Esky with like, which is like an ice box. I don't know if that's what you guys call it in the UK. I can't remember. But anyway, and he kicked it. He lined up. He just like booted it and just like, bam, you know, all these bottles came out, smashed against the wall. I'm like, I'm carrying this fucking thing so that everyone, you know, could enjoy its content later after the show. And he just went off on one. And he's kind of like a very, he needs his sleep and stuff. And we'd sort of probably kept him out too late drinking and he had a bit of a reaction to it. And the second, you know, see, he's just not built for the sort of touring lifestyle and stuff, Craig. It doesn't work for him. But we did do those two shows with him, with the band, and they sounded really good. They came out, they were just like, they sounded the same as when we first toured with them. We felt
they actually, like, I felt like they had quite like, I felt like they had a bit of fire, actually. They, you know, because they, I'm just going to be honest, they can be like 10, and then if Craig's sort of like not feeling it or whatever, it can be a little bit more shambolic, which is still fun to watch. But like, you know, when it's on, it's fucking on. And I thought they were really on at those two Australian shows. But I mean, you know, but yeah, Craig's Craig. And like, I remember when he threw a witch's hat at someone at some point. And then also because they were set up in front of our gear because they played first. And at the end of his show, he turned around and like swung his guitar backwards and it went right through Nick's amp, which was like 20 feet away. Went right through the speaker cone or whatever. So, I mean, like, you know, but that's what he's really unpredictable. And he's a brilliant songwriter, you know. I still listen to Homesick and, you know, there's a couple others on the second record that I really like as well. I think he's a brilliant songwriter. And I hope that, you know, I hope, you know, he keeps making music, because I really, like, I respect him a lot as a songwriter, and I love the band. They're all super sweet dudes. Like, you know, we've known each other for years.
Grandpa Batman says, saw you guys with Oasis in Detroit. You were played on heavy rotation on US radio, and Are You Gonna Be My Girl was on PlayStation game soundtracks. That was a genius marketing idea to reach an audience. Was that something conceived by your label or management? And what's your thoughts on being on American football game soundtracks? Are you sports fans?
Management definitely chased all those sync stuff. I think that they were ahead of the time in thinking that, you know, record sales are down and music needs to get to the people, and how you're going to do it, and just do it any way possible. So, you know, now there is just no one even blinks an eye, you know, advert, game.
There used to be a stigma about it, and then it sort of became like, well, you know, radio, TV ads and films and stuff, it became sort of like the new radio, you know.
Like, it's not like everyone's, it's not like we're happy about it. I think by the time we released Get Born, our first record, record sales were down 40 to 50% already. So it's not like everyone, all the musicians were real happy about, you know, being on ads and stuff. Yeah, when you've got people writing software that just makes it, you know, the value of music just plummets, you know, I mean, what are you going to do? So, but it was cool, you know, that Madden stuff actually, because it's like, it's not just an advert. It's like people sit there and play those games and they hear those songs and they become quite fond of whatever's on there. Like, I remember like playing old video games. I can't remember which ones like had songs on them, but I knew those songs, man, like back front, you know, and there's a relationship there. So I think like video games are a bit
different. I guess it didn't know. That's a FIFA one. Remember that? I guess it didn't know. Who's that? Some like English kind of like
Ronnie Hawk magic. Tony Hawk. I just knew a lot of like punk sort of stuff from West Coast of America and stuff. But that stuff, like there were that many people coming up and it was all about Madden, like that too. Like, man, you're on the Madden gang.
Yeah, you never did come up to you and go, oh my God, you're strong. I heard it on the Madden game on MLB. And I'm like, what the fuck? Oh, baseball? You know, like we didn't play baseball. We don't play, and well, basketball's not even really popular. I mean, you know, we have our own kind of football. You're probably aware of it being an Englishman, but the rest of the world are not. So, but yeah, anyway, it's footy season now. How are the Cats doing?
I don't know. I don't really watch footy, but I, yeah.
Yeah, that's Mark. Sorry. Whoops. Wrong jet.
Wrong jet person. Ask him how he, so this is DJW0044. Ask him how he broke his foot kicking a wall in New York. I'm not sure.
Oh, if, Nick?
Is that not either of you guys then? I don't know.
Where's the source from that story?
I've no idea. Ask him how he broke his foot kicking a wall in New York. Are neither of you going to claim that?
Well, I'm not going to claim. I know who it was, but I'm not going to tell you who it was.
Fair enough.
I'm sorry. I don't want to be a killjoy, but you know, it's like, it's part of the code, and I don't particularly know if this person would be super impressed if I just started yapping about it.
About kicking a wall. The wall, you know, all the names have been changed to protect the internet.
Yeah. Okay, let's just say, let's give him a name.
I don't remember.
Let's just say that Eric. Let's just say that Eric was having a very bad day. And Eric went to work and got a phone call from someone else who was very unhappy and having a very bad day. So a wall was kicked and a foot was hurt. The show went on, however, and yes, it was in New York and it was at Madison Square Garden. And I remember that particularly being one of the best shows of the tour. I don't know about you, Cam, but I had a felt like we had a really good show and an excellent party afterwards. I think I walked home without a shirt on. Like it was quite a ruckus at the bar. I don't think you were there, Cam, because you were kind of like chilling on that tour. You were reading books and stuff.
Yeah, I was catching up on some reading. That's funny as a sort of level of party. Like what level of success? Like walks home without shirt on. Pretty good, that, you know.
Walking home without shirt on is like 10. Although my dad once came home from a party with literally nothing on and just knocked on the door at my house. And my mama opened the door and he was just standing there naked. He was like, just doing this face. And that's folklore from my childhood. I heard about that story, but I'm not sure if I quite believe, but I kind of do as well. I could see my dad having a few too many like margaritas and like coming home with no clothes on. I can probably see that. And my mom just being utterly confused. But anyway, definitely. I can tell you also I had another really interesting conversation with somebody about aliens on that tour. Let's not get into that. It's a little bit out there. I think you'd want to be on acid or mushrooms to understand.
All right. Well, I'll leave this as the last question then, because we always do tend to end it with, as I drop clips in throughout, we'll tend to end it with the sort of favorite Oasis or Gallagher related track from the guests. And Cloudburst or at Lightning _ Shock says, what's their favorite Oasis song album? Plus also what's the favorite Oasis B-side? So either your favorite Oasis song or B-side, and then we'll drop that in. And if you tell us why you like it particularly, and then we'll drop it in at the end.
Okay, wait, the master plan were all B-sides, right?
Yeah.
So what was the big one off that? I'm not as familiar with the B-sides, but I know that huge song was that Free to Be Whatever I, which was through Monty Python dudes, right?
Yes. Well, whatever. That was a.
You can cut this part out of it, by the way.
Oh, no, we'll definitely include that. No, that's fine. The big one on the master plan is probably Acquiesce, because we need
each other. Oh, yeah, because we need each other. Yeah. Okay, well, I'll say my favorite B-side is Acquiesce. Probably like a lot of people. It's such a massive song that it feels like it could have been on Morning Glory, and it's standalone, like classic, really. Like, I mean, I love it as much as I love all of their songs, but I'm gonna say my favorite all-time Oasis track is probably Live Forever. There's something special about that song that is just I don't know what the word to describe it would be, but it definitely sort of gives me a feeling that I don't get from any other song. And to watch them sing it to a massive audience that are singing it back to them is, I mean, I don't want to sound cheesy, but yeah, it is. It's an experience, you know. It's like, it definitely like makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up. And then to have them walk off stage and be the same people they are on stage, which is like funny and full of life. And like, you know, I would say that Liam kind of almost expects everyone to be as excited as he is about everything, which is like, you know what I mean? Like, he's always on 10. So he's like, you have to be on 10 or else like, I can't use it. You know what I mean? Like, that's sort of his energy, which is really like, you know, it's quite brilliant, you know. It's fun to be around, and so I'm gonna say, "Live Forever" is my favorite, and "Acquiesce" is my B-side.
Brilliant, Cam. What we got?
I say "Live Forever" is definitely holds that spot for me, but I think because of the tour and the song "Lila," what it meant throughout that tour for me, you know, I was definitely probably my favorite track off the record. I think it was the first single, but the melody rolling along, the sort of ringing sort of sound of the guitar, you know, the way that just sort of went through the whole thing. It was yeah, I really like that tune. And it was definitely something that I got up for every night, you know. It was cool. And the B-side, I don't know, it's not Oasis. It's like, it's when Liam sang with Death in Vegas.
Scorpio Rising.
Oh, that's Scorpio Rising track. That was sick. When you kiss the base of my spine.
Yeah, yeah. So that's got a real, like, sort of 60s garage, so, or maybe psychedelic more, to be honest, psychedelic thing, which he just taps right into, and his voice just, like, it's just, it's Liam at 10, you know what I mean? It sounds fantastic.
I'm 10 out of 10 all night. I love that. Like, what's that song on Don't Believe the Truth?
Meaning of Soul.
I'm 10 out of 10 all night. Yeah, I love that song. I mean, like Cam said, I mean, I've got, you know, a real soft spot for Don't Believe the Truth because that was the one that they were touring when we were with them. So like Cam said, every night, you know, what's the one? Come on, baby.
Let There Be Love. About,
Let There Be Love. Let There Be Love.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They didn't really play it much on that tour, if at all, actually.
When you kiss the base of my spine, make my body into your shrine. You give me this feeling deep inside, one that I can no longer disguise. While other snakes just shed their skins, fuck tones spotting at my sins.
So where can the kids find you online? Where should they look out for your stuff?
I'm Cam_Muncy. Muncey on Insta. So come join, man. And I'm putting updates on there about what's happening with Zoonotics. I'm still sort of recorded about 8-9 tracks, so, but you know, keep on it. We'll be releasing sometime, hopefully the end of the year.
Let me see what my thing is. My Instagram is, it's just Chris Sester. So CHRISCESTER. But fuck that. Go to the Mystic Knights of Amnesia page because we've started using that one a lot and there's a release on the way. And it's just fucking cool. So Mystic Knights of Amnesia, one word. So, you know, I mean, you probably have to have an education if you want to type it into your search window.
Well, that would all be linked below. But
thanks.
Gentlemen, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for your time. And we'll see you again soon.
Cheers, man.
Thanks.
So I hope you guys enjoyed that. You know, I really, really had such a fun time speaking to them, as you can hear there. You can just imagine me with a massive smile on my face as they're sort of going back and forth, sort of swapping memories and stuff. I absolutely loved it. And I've been in touch with them since, just direct messages and things. And they're just cool guys, just so cool. Amazing. Do make sure you're following them on those Instagram pages. And also, why don't you just give them a shout and let them know you heard them on the Oasis podcast. I know that's always really appreciated when people do that. But anyway, let's finish up. So what do I normally say? I say thank you very much for listening to the Oasis podcast. And most of all, thanks go to our patrons. You put your money where your mouth is and it's greatly appreciated. Just to clarify, the Patreon, a lot of people do Patreon, including Matt Morgan. It starts at £5 a month. I just don't think that's right. I think you do it from £1 a month. If someone, you know, there's a lot of people, £5 a lot of money, you know, that's sort of as much as a channel subscription on a TV, or as much as, like, you know, there's quite a lot to people. So that just feels too much to me. If someone wants to pay £5 a month, that's absolutely brilliant and greatly appreciated. But £1 a month is absolutely fine. So if you'd like to support the show and you appreciate what I do, from £1 a month, you can go there, you can sign up, and there's access to loads of other stuff. over there, bonus episodes, the episodes go up early, the exclusive Discord channel, which has been really good fun. So yeah, if you want to sign up, then head over there and do that. Do please subscribe on the different podcatchers. You can always email me, oasispod@gmail.com. Follow on the social media. Instagram is oasispod and Facebook and Twitter is at oasispodcast. And just a reminder, you can get the three episodes I've done so far on Borough House Radio. They're all on Patreon and they're all on the Mixcloud of Borough House Radio. So you can go and listen to those. They're really good. All right, that'll do it for today. As ever, thank you for listening. Stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.